Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. You are not going crazy. It is Monday and we are on the air. It's kind of a weird time. Well, a very weird time. We've got a global pandemic, an uprising against racist police violence, and a special legislative session dropped in the middle of it all, the likes of which no one has ever seen before. Maybe one that people still aren't seeing because there have been so many access issues. Well, in today's episode, we dig in to bring you what's new and developing with the emergency legislative session, what bills have been passed, what is on the way, and what is being held until January. Those are just a few of the topics that we're covering in this episode. I talk with journalists from New Mexico PBS and the NM Political Report. I also talk with an organizer who was on the forefront of voting rights in tribal lands. First up, KUNM's Nash Jones has a news rundown of what we know today, Monday, June 22nd, as of 5 p.m.
The Trump administration announced today that the president will sign an executive order suspending certain temporary work visas. NPR reports the administration says the order is intended to protect jobs covered by the visas for American workers amid high unemployment due to the coronavirus pandemic. NPR reports California has hit an all-time high for hospitalizations of people who tested positive for COVID-19 at over 3,700. Meanwhile, Florida now has over 100,000 coronavirus cases. Rayshard Brooks, a black man who was shot and killed by an Atlanta police officer June 12th, is being laid to rest this week. CNN reports public viewing is taking place today and a private funeral will be held tomorrow. NPR reports a noose was found in the garage of Bubba Wallace, NASCAR's only black driver, yesterday during a race in Talladega, Alabama. Wallace had advocated for the racing organization's ban of the Confederate flag, which was put into effect last week. The U.S. Justice Department announced today that it's investigating the incident. Here in New Mexico, the Albuquerque Journal reports Stephen Baca, who shot and critically injured a protester in Old Town Albuquerque last week, was ordered released today by a Bernalillo County district judge. While the judge said Baca does pose a danger to the community, certain conditions could mitigate the risk, including being prohibited from possessing a firearm or attending protests while charges are pending. Senate Bill 8, which requires police statewide to wear body cameras, passed the House 44-26 this afternoon and now heads to Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham for signature. The AP reports the state legislature sent a revised spending plan to the governor's desk for signature on Saturday. The $7 billion spending plan for the fiscal year starting next week on July 1st cut about $600 million from the plan approved earlier this year. House lawmakers did not take up a proposal to express opposition as a body to the governor's motion in March to dismiss the Yazzie Martinez case. The landmark education lawsuit, decided in July of 2018, found the state's education system had failed Native American students, English learners, and others. The House memorial would have called for the state to develop long-term comprehensive plans to address the systemic racism and resource inequities in schools. This year's Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta has been canceled due to the coronavirus pandemic. The Albuquerque Journal reports the event has been pushed out to next year. The New Mexico Department of Health announced today the state saw no new deaths related to COVID-19, a first since mid-April. 128 new cases were reported, bringing the statewide total to 10,694. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Nash Jones.
Joining me now is Matt Reitbach. He is with the NM Political Report. We're here to talk about the legislative session. Matt, how's it going?
Going pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, man. You know, you've covered the legislature closely for a very long time. So tell me, what's it been like trying to watch this session unfold?
Yeah, it's definitely been a strange special session. I mean, every special session I've covered has been unusual in one way or another. But this one with the social distancing, with a lot of legislators not in the chamber, participating off-site or in their offices, but it's been interesting to say the least.
So tell me, what are some of the things you've seen during this session that you've never seen before?
Every session is unique in a lot of ways. I think this one is really just the pall of COVID-19 over everything has kind of made it such an unusual thing.
Yeah, people are paying attention to those things with much more scrutiny. So have you seen lawmakers speaking in more franker, candid ways about issues than you're used to?
I think that the lawmakers are still doing the same thing. They still speak in the same way. We kind of know which state senators or state representatives are going to have a long speech.
Yeah.
And we kind of sometimes know what they're going to say before they say it.
No, I was about to say, none of them are really couching their words, so they're kind of operating as they standardly or normally would.
Yeah, I think definitely. It's interesting because also this special session is taking place a few months before an election. So Every single one of these legislators is up for election this year. A lot of them don't have opponents in the general election as usual, but still there's a lot of folks that aren't coming back. because of the primaries. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's one thing that's unique is I can't remember a time when there were seven or more lame duck senators casting votes on issues.
Have you seen anything interesting in terms of their voting?
I think that if we want to get into the election bill, I think that definitely played a role in there. The election bill where they kind of, not completely changed it, but added in open primaries for non-major party candidates. Senator John Sapien actually introduced that. And Sapien isn't coming back next year. He decided not to run for re-election. And this open primaries has been a big issue for many years that some people have tried to put forward. And it's very strange that now is the time where it went through in an emergency bill that's supposed to look forward to November. But this is something that won't happen until 2.5 more years because there's no primaries until 2022.
What, if anything, do you think is being missed from the coverage?
It is a pretty narrowly focused special session. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how many unique stories there are. Like, there isn't a regular session. Special sessions are such a smaller universe than a regular session. Really, everyone's reporting the same stories at the same time. There's only one or two things going on at a time.
Yeah.
Unlike in a regular session where you could go and cover a random bill that no one else is covering. But here, there's only a handful of bills that are even going to make it to the floor for votes.
Was there anything that happened over the weekend and or today that, you know, raised an eyebrow for you?
The election thing was the big bomb that came down. The elections bill where they wanted to add automatic vote by mail to everybody, where they'd sent county clerks would be able to send out ballots to everybody.
Yes.
But in the Senate Rules Committee, they stripped that out. And instead, clerks can send absentee ballot applications, which is similar to what happened during the primary. And as we saw in Santa Fe County and Taos County, there was such a flood of absentee ballots, they just honestly couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
Because absentee ballots take so much longer to count.
And, you know, finally, let me ask you, you know, as we're coming out of this session, do you think that there's some lingering questions about the process come January that are going to be addressed?
Well, I think I was going to say the $1 million question, but the $7 billion question is the budget. Did they do enough to make sure that the budget is balanced? Because the state of New Mexico, like 48 other states, has to balance its budget according to the state constitution. Mm-hmm. Can't run a deficit. They've used a bunch of federal funds, including a ton of money from the CARES Act, to try to fill some holes. There is some question of whether that's allowed, whether the federal government will allow states to use CARES Act funding for, you know, for filling budget holes. The state seems pretty confident that the guidance they've received says they can. If they can't, January's going to be bad. You've used a lot of reserves. There's not many reserves left.
Well, let's hope things get a little bit better and a little bit easier as we move forward, particularly if they can get some sort of program down before the general election in November. I'm sure I'll be talking to you again before then. I want to thank you for coming on to the show. He's Matt Reichbach from the New Mexico Political Report. Thanks again, Matt.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Are you concerned about what you can't see during this special session? Or with everything going on, is it even registering with you? Call up our hotline, leave a message, and we'll interview you. Call 505-218-7084 or email yournmgov@gmail.com. This is Your NM Government. I'm your host, Khalil Ekolona. We're covering life during the pandemic and how what's happening affects us all differently. Tune in Wednesday through Friday at 7 p.m. here on KUNM or find every episode anywhere you get your podcasts. I have the pleasure to be joined by two guests for this next conversation. I'm joined by Gene Grant and Kevin McDonald, both with New Mexico PBS. Gene is the host of New Mexico in Focus, and Kevin is an executive producer at New Mexico PBS. Gentlemen, thanks for being with me.
Great to be with you,
Khalil.
What are you up to right now in covering this emergency legislative session?
I am listening very attentively to the House in floor session. Of course, the Senate over the weekend on Saturday finished up the work that they thought they needed to do, mainly the budget bill, and then adjourned and went home saying their work was done. But the House had several bills that the Senate passed that still needed to be addressed in their House. And so the big one today so far has all been about the mandatory body cameras for police officers. Again, that bill passed the Senate. They're debating it in the House as we speak.
Interesting. How's that debate going? How is it unfolding?
It actually almost went away today. There was a motion to table this until 2023. They had a vote on that within the last half hour, and that vote to table the measure failed. So they're back to debating it.
Yeah, well, talk about trying to kick the can down the road.
Just to pick up on Kevin for a second there, you know, part of that debate on the CAMS is when to implement the bill. The bill as written has a very aggressive timeline of 90 days. And the big debate this afternoon has been, well, Colorado's looking at 2023 to do their lapel camera thing statewide. And other people are saying, look, it's just too aggressive, too fast in 2021 versus 2023. There's a lot of different ideas floating around out there, but it's been fascinating. And to pick up on something else Kevin mentioned as well about the Senate adjourning, I was also interested. A lot of the House members during this lapel camera debate have taken it to note that the Senate has, quote, left them hung out to dry, end quote. I think it was one of the quotes I heard from one of the members. And there's no small amount of angst about how the Senate just kind of boogied and went home after the budget, as Kevin mentioned. I think they're really kind of annoyed that, you know, they're going to be, you know, tasked with the heavy lifting. Then these guys being the Senate comes back and suddenly, you know, revisions and things becomes a whole other issue. But it's been an interesting day. It's been a very interesting day.
And keep in mind, if the House decides to change anything in this bill or the bills that have already passed the Senate, that creates a whole other rigmarole, because the Senate either has to come back and handle their vote on the changes to the bill or basically ignore it. And so this is what played out with the elections bill. Basically, the Democrats in the House didn't have the votes to get that through because of some changes, but they decided in order to get any of what they wanted passed in terms of how we're going to handle the general election, they had to vote for it now. Anything else, changing it or voting it down, obviously, would mean that none of it was going to get passed. So the Senate's forced their hands in a lot of ways that no doubt there's some frustration around.
Does this breed contempt between the chambers?
You know,
I don't know if it's any more than normal. There's always a little bit of that that goes on. I would describe it more as the House is the younger sibling and the Senate is the older sibling. There's always a little bit of that happens. The dynamics are very different within the two houses. And it's not unprecedented for one house to do their work, especially in a special session, and adjourn and go home and say, we're done. But I don't think anybody was necessarily expecting that out of the gate this time.
Let's switch it over to the election and voters' rights. Because many advocates say people who live in tribal nations, they lost access to the polls during the primary. And the changes in the state's election law were pretty stripped down by the time they made it through the process. And some things advocates would say have helped preserve folks' right to vote weren't in the version that made it through. Watching all of this, were there any surprises for either of you?
Obviously the big surprise, which was the thing that almost derailed everything, which was basically this idea that Senator John Sapien threw in as an amendment that would basically allow in primary elections for people to change their political affiliation as they get to the voting place. And so that's really, you know, opening up our primary election is a conversation we've had for a long time, we'll continue to have. But this felt to a lot of folks like a sort of end around everything that was trying to be accomplished, which was how do we run the general election, considering we're probably going to be in the same COVID-19 boat, if not worse. And so for that to almost derail, it would have been really problematic for a lot of folks. I know there are efforts in there still to try to accommodate a lot of those things you talked about, Khalil, in terms of they want to make sure they protect and give Native voters more places to be able to cast their vote. The idea, as much as in the primary election, that everybody will be getting an application to apply for an absentee vote. And they're also working on things like allowing people to apply for those absentee votes earlier. A lot of folks, especially up around Santa Fe, applied for absentee votes very early and didn't get into the last minute and had to go take it in person by hand to the voting, the clerk's office to make sure it got counted in time. They're working on changing a lot of those deadlines to try to accommodate, as well as work with vendors and the Postal Service and other folks to speed up those timelines. So they're still trying to address those things. Again, we're in such a unique environment with so many things that lawmakers are trying to tackle in a special session that just felt ambitious no matter how you did it. And so nothing was going to be perfect. John Arthur Smith, he was talking about the budget, but he had a great line, something of the effect of, it's not the best solution, but it's the solution we have for you right now. And I think the election one was definitely one of those.
I mean, November is coming around the corner. Do you feel like there's a sense of really trying to have some sort of motive apparatus that we can really work from with the election, so we're not scattershot and kind of running around crazy as if we were not prepared?
I think the county clerks are highly motivated to get this right. I really do. I think this is like an opportunity for them. Not they through any fault of them, their own, but that situation they had where all those ballots came in late or too late to be counted, that was a difficulty. I mean, and maybe it's in the long haul, maybe that was a good thing because it spurred a lot of changes to be discussed right away. But I think the county clerks are motivated. This if it works, and that's in finger quotes, who knows what's going to be happening in November with all this stuff. I mean, we have a president already today, as you know, calling his shot on mail-in votes being fraudulent already in a tweet today. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to be in the air about this for a while that are going to make it difficult. But I finished with the way I started. I think the county clerks are super motivated to get this done right, you know, for the future.
Yeah, and I think this approach is about as even-handed as you can deal with this, because the absentee ballot application allows for that extra step of security to verify those applications against voter rolls. It's not just a strict mail-in ballot. They send you a ballot in the mail, you send it back. And so they're trying. And I think, like with everything else, the rub in all of this is, to do any of this, you've got to dig further into the pocketbook. I think the price tag for another absentee-focused election in November is at $3 million. So anything you come up with to try to address giving people more access to the polls comes at a higher price tag when we don't have dollars to go around to begin with.
You know, people are calling for police to be defunded or funded less, but that does not seem to be a real consideration for public officials. Do we see any calls from legislators during the emergency session to pull money from law enforcement?
No, you mentioned it early on, Khalil. There was a whole lot of kicking the can down the road to January. It's going to be a crazy and a contentious session, I think, because at the end of the day, even with the budget, we cut about $600 million. When you factor in about $750 million in federal dollars, we still increased the budget over last year by about 1.5%. It was 7.6% at the end of the regular session. So we're still actually spending more. And so there was not a lot of will, and you're not surprised when you think it's an election year, that lawmakers, in large part, they did some things, but in large part, they said, let's plug a couple gaps and let's just get to pass the elections. Then we'll make all the hard decisions. So it's going to be tough then. What most things turned into is what happened with the qualified immunity around police, where it's harder to prosecute police for things like we saw with George Floyd. And we do what we do in New Mexico. We're creating a commission, a 9-member commission, to study it and make recommendations. And these lapel cameras, which another stumbling block there, is 90 days for departments to do it. And also there's no money coming from the state to figure out how to get these cameras either. So you're definitely not seeing any hard and fast cutting efforts there. You're seeing a lot of, we'll take this up again next year.
That's right. That's my sense of it as well, as I watch it. You know, politicians, this is what they do. When they realize there's no vote to be had that's going to be, you know, of any significance, it's a time to just sort of pontificate and set the whole thing up for January. And I think that's what you're seeing a lot of going on now. And let me circle back to something Kevin mentioned as well, and that's that 9-member Civil Rights Commission. I'm going to be interested to watch this close. I mean, this is going to be, you know, this whole idea of qualified immunity, state by state, as this goes along, it's going to be an interesting situation for us. What's going to be in the air come January already from other states for qualified immunity? It's going to be very interesting to watch. If there's a rash of states that get after this, it really makes some significant changes. It's going to make that much easier in January if that's your inclination. Yeah. However, it's a harder push when you're one of those states trying to crack through and be one of the first ones to do it. That's a whole other sort of an art. And I'm not sure this special session lends itself to that. So, yeah, you know, January it's going to be, and that's that, you know.
I want to thank you both for coming on the show and offering your perspective and insight. Gene Grant, host of New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS, and Kevin McDonald, executive producer at New Mexico PBS. Gentlemen, thanks again. I hope to talk with you both soon.
Thanks, Khalil.
Sure, appreciate your work, Khalil.
Joining me now is Amber Carrillo. She is with Common Cause. We're here to talk about election rights and the access to the vote. Amber, thanks for being with me again.
Thank you, Khalil. It's a pleasure.
So tell me, what do you think about what the legislature's doing right now in terms of voting rights and how that bill is shaping up during the emergency session?
So I think it's important to look at why the legislature came to the table to make all of these decisions. I think is important to me is for everyone to realize the Secretary of State had to drop the proclamation for the special session, and in there is an outline of the reasons why. And most prominently, of course, is all of the adjustments folks have to make in a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. And that temporary changes to election procedures are necessary to help maintain access and fair elections. And of course, we have a significant tribal representation in New Mexico, so Native American voting rights is absolutely prominent in the special session. It's important that we were included.
In the primary, did you see tribal lands lose voting access during the pandemic?
Yes. That, again, was part of, I think, the difficulty that we can see that gets exacerbated in this pandemic. And part of it was the communication between county clerks and tribal leaders sometimes. You know, I wanted to just send my condolences out to all the people who are suffering right now, because right now in New Mexico, 60% of the people impacted by COVID-19 are Native American. Mm-hmm. That's over 5,000 cases. And so every decision that a tribal leader makes about allowing folks to leave the community and allowing folks to come into the community is a decision that he or she has to live with for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
So I can completely understand why a tribal leader may not be interested in, you know, having folks bring in equipment and then running the administration of an election. You know, even though I know that they absolutely believe in democracy, I mean, you can talk to any tribal leader in New Mexico and they're all going to say that, yes, voting is important. Two tribes in particular had probably more difficulty than others. That was the Pueblo of San Felipe and the Pueblo of Zia. I know that both of those places did not have a polling location. And on the day of the election, I think folks are trying to figure out where to go vote, and it did present problems to them. The other place that I'm intimately familiar with is the Pueblo of Zuni. And the reason for that is because I had a couple of ladies helping me do some election work there. One of the things that happened is the tribe decided, along probably with the county clerk, to put a single polling location at the exterior of the Pueblo. We did a lot of talking to people, the ladies in Zuni did. And one of the things that folks experienced was they didn't have transportation, but that actually is preceded by not having a telephone to be able to call someone to get a ride to the polling location, because Zuni usually has three polling sites, and one of them is at the tribal administration building, which is right in the center of the village. And so folks usually walk over to the tribal administration building and cast their ballot. So this year, they talked a lot about not having that access, but it also brings to light the issues of not having a telephone. Even if you did have a telephone and you called someone, there's fear from both sides of that discussion that you could infect each other.
Yeah.
If we are going to have a single polling site in certain communities, we really have to think about the logistics of that.
Would ballots being mailed out automatically, would that have helped? Mm-hmm.
I think so. The language in the bill was actually that the county clerks had the option to mail out ballots. Mm-hmm. I think 29 of the county clerks out of 33 from beginning to end were in favor of that option. And so having as many options to voting as possible is probably the best way to go.
Question. What do you like about the bill that was passed?
The decisions to keep communication with the county clerks mm-hmm. is required, and it has to be in writing, which means that there absolutely has to be some form of communication. And that is not to put the onus on the tribe. but really on the county clerks, because the clerks do have to now present something that says we made every attempt possible.
Yeah, have to have a record of it.
Exactly, exactly. And a record of who talked to whom. Leading up to the primary, I was making a lot of phone calls on behalf of people to county clerks about polling locations. And so, you know, it's really hard to know, like, who talked to whom. Now there will be a record of it, which I think is helpful for accountability.
Now, what concerns do you have about this quickly coming November election and people on tribal lands being able to exercise their right to vote?
The concerns are really educating folks, informing them about the adjustments to the timelines. County clerks have been requested through this bill to send those applications and ballots out earlier than usual, but folks also have to get them back in on the day of the election. So there's a little bit more room for folks to access the ballot through mail, but there's not an extension for the deadline. Your ballots are going to be due on election day, and that takes us back to the issue at the Pueblo of Zuni. If you look at the number of ballots that weren't counted, and also I think you can also look at the number of applications that were received after the primary, and the number of ballots that were rejected is pretty high, like 2,900 and something.
Wow.
We think again about the example of the Pueblo of Zuni, where people didn't have transportation. So if they did access the ballot via mail and held on to it, then it was important to have a way to deliver it to the polling location on that day. And, you know, based on the conversations I've heard, that transportation just was not easy for folks.
Yeah.
And that's not a new issue for tribes, honestly. It's a good time to have the conversations we're having in our communities.
We're going to keep on having these conversations. I want to thank you so much for breaking it down for us and keeping us aware of some of these issues that hopefully can be addressed and fixed before November comes around. She is Amber Carrillo with Common Cause. Thanks again, Amber.
Thank you, Khalil, for your interest. I appreciate it so much.
It's about that time for resources. Find a full list of the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. Watch New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS. Check out past episodes and other content by heading to nmpbs.org. Plus, New Mexico PBS has been live streaming so you can see the legislative session for yourself. Scope out the New Mexico in Focus page on Facebook. There you'll find it. Check out the Common Cause New Mexico chapter. Head to commoncause.org/new-mexico. Read great articles from Matt Rybak and other journalists by heading to nmpoliticalreport.com to catch up on all the legal happenings in the state. And if you need a refresher on the legislature, find any of the episodes in this show's pre-COVID era to hear our daily updates during the last legislative session. They're on KUNM.org or find them anywhere in your podcasts. Hear us now on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays on KUNM's airwaves at 7 p.m. And as always, you can find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe anywhere, anywhere, anywhere you get your podcasts. I really mean anywhere. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco, theme music by Pope Yes Yes Y'all. It's produced by yours truly. They say two wrongs don't make a right, but two T's get the editing done. Many thanks to Ty Bannerman and Taylor Velasquez for their help, and Nash Jones with the news update. I'm Khalil A. Colonna. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, thanks for listening on a Monday.